This is an interview with Ms. Edda Boyd. It's taking place in Town Hall House in Kent Street in Sydney. The project is the City of Sydney's Horses in Inner Sydney Oral History Project. Interviewer is Margot Beasley, and the date is the 31st of October 2007. I should just mention here on the tape that Edda Boyd is being interviewed about horses for this project, but she's also a long-term employee of the City of Sydney and formerly South Sydney Council, so there may be references in this interview to those other aspects of her life. Okay, so what we want to talk about really is about horses in Glebe. And Edda, I think you are originally of Estonian extraction.
Mm-hmm.
But you were actually born in Sweden,
mm-hmm.
and you came to Sydney when you were how old?
Five, 1950. Going
in 1950,
on five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you went to live in Glebe straight away?
For a short time with my family in Kirribilli, and then I had to go and live with an aunt because my parents split up. So it was a bit of a tragic, happened quite often with migrants and family. One member can't cope with the change, it's all just a bit too much. So I went to live with my aunt, my father's sister. And when she bought the house in Glebe, he moved in too. So I grew up with my aunt and my father. So.
And what are your earliest memories of Glebe?
Oh, it was a lovely place. Oh, remember.
What was lovely about it?
I suppose as a child everything's lovely if you're reasonably happy and well looked after. But there was a good mix of people, but there was business, there was a cinema across the road. There was always movement, people out. It was a nice life. But I suppose I could say that I can remember nice things of Kirribilli, the short time that I was there. So I remember the backyard there and playing. I suppose they're just childhood memories that you just treasure. And they become more important when you think, because they're connected to family.
You stayed in Glebe for quite a number of years,
yes,
didn't you?
Yeah.
Until when?
I left in 64 when I went to Europe, when my father died. He died in 64, and then I went back to Europe to try and claim our property.
So you would have been in your late teens then?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah,
so really 18, from the age of five to through to the age of 18 or 19 in Glebe.
Yep.
So that your memories actually would be pretty vivid.
Yes, those ones. Yeah, no, like I might have mentioned before, the Astor Theatre, because that was virtually where we all learnt English.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, because we went Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. I saw everything. I saw whatever was showing, we went to look at. And that was a good way of, you know, just, you know, pictures say a thousand words and then a couple of words with it, really, you know, because you can easily, it's not easy learning a new language coming to a new country. Because I actually spoke Swedish when I arrived, then went to live with an Estonian aunt who only spoke Estonian. So but the shared language with English, so, but, you know.
And the Astor Cinema was what later became the Valhalla,
Valhalla,
which is now also closed down fairly recently.
Mm, yes, I suppose the area's changed a great deal.
So your house, or your aunt's house, was actually on what is now called Glebe Point Road.
That's right.
I think it had a different name then.
Yes, we just used to call it, and I understand some people still call it that day, we just used to call it Glebe Road. Yes, and I lived at 178 Glebe Road.
Mm. And there was a bit of a social distinction between Glebe Point and between Glebe
definitely,
itself.
Definitely. Or even, I suppose, if you as you move further down, because the people closer to Broadway End, the small cottages and things like that, after St John's Road, you didn't mix with them as much. And because of the distance maybe or something, they all sort of either congregated in that area because the kids went to Glebe Public School. Towards Forest Lodge end, towards the Glebe Point end, we went to Forest Lodge School. So, yeah, just different communities and groups. I mean, we all knew each other and tolerated. It was, you know, no gangland that I was aware of, certainly in the 50s and that.
Mm.
If anything, the kids played on the streets, so open, you know, streets and weren't many cars, so it was easy to move around the area. And if you weren't playing in someone else's backyard or someone else's lane, you know, you could migrate in a day to this house, to that house, to this lane, you know, and it was okay.
Were there many Estonians in Glebe?
Not in Glebe, no. Most of them were in Surrey Hills and around Estonia House, which is still there today in Campbell Street, Surrey Hills. So we frequented there.
How did your aunt, this is a bit of a side issue, but how did your aunt come to be in a position to buy the house?
She'd been here since about 38, so before the war. So I had three aunts, three sisters. My father had three sisters here that had come out from Estonia because of the Soviets moving in, and well, before the actual occupation of the Soviets, but the Russian Revolution did affect some of the countries there. There was in the 20s, Estonia was very, very go ahead and everything else, and then towards the 30s, things got harder and everything else. Worldwide depression and people moved on, but my other three aunts came out earlier.
So your aunt was quite well established.
Yeah, she was the only single aunt though. The other two were married and they already had their houses. Uncle Oscar and Auntie Linda, they had lived at Avalon for a short time, then came to Gordon, and he did one of the first exporting of orchids to Japan. He was a specialist and a botanist. My other uncle lived at Crow's Nest with my cousin, who's now in England now. He was made special shoes for DJs, you know, for children. He made our shoes too, and I loved them. Lovely little. And when I was a teenager, I got a pair with a little heel on them, which was really quite something for Australia. Yes, they're really European sort of French style little shoes. Just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. So back to the horses.
Yeah. All right. Horses.
What prompted this interview was you, or me, being told that in fact that you had had, in effect, a pet horse,
a pet pony,
you were growing up in Glebe. So tell us a bit about the circumstances around that.
Okay. I was thinking, too, that I was remembering the other day when we sort of had a bit of an outline, too, that perhaps my father and my aunt that I live with, Hilda and my father, Ian, that they were enthusiastic race goers. Races and trots and everything else. Now, whether that had something to do with an interest, but also too, the property we had in Estonia was a working horse farm. Both of them obviously had great interests in that.
And horses would have been, perhaps for them, a normal part of life.
I think it was still a very normal part of life in Glebe in the 50s.
Yes.
The Iceman still had his horse truck. Other things might have been old vans, and that came. Bread, I think, came in that, but still a lot of horses around in the area. Glebe is full of stables, racing stables, and a lot of the children, too, they didn't have the bikes. That, it was a big mix, even of the wealthy. I wouldn't say the wealth. Still, people didn't have the wealth that might be associated with young children being able to have brand new bikes at Christmas and things like that. Most things were hand-me-downs, even in Glebe, I think, even with the well-established old families. So if you didn't have an older brother or you didn't know what someone, to buy a new bike was just wasn't there at that time. You know, young children didn't have them. Might have scooters or something like that in the kindergarten, but not, you know, you're quite privileged to have your own two-wheeler sort of thing.
But it wasn't a privilege necessarily to have a pony.
I'm trying to think now that I remember in the stables, we sort of graduated from horse, well, to pony to horse or whatever we wanted. But I sort of had a pony for about two seasons through a stable. Now, I think my father did pay a fee. Now, look, maybe I'm thinking that he might have had some relationship in that. I have no idea. I don't remember. I was 10, 11. And I had him for about 13. And then he was quite a small horse, but not a dinky pony or anything. Like a little Indian pony. But you see, this was another craze to all the movies and all the things. You had all the horse stories, you know, from My Friend Flicker and Pinto, and all those things are the things we saw at the movie. But still the main mode of transport, I think, for people and for children too. But there were masses of books on horses. I mean, really, there's the whole generation. My sister couldn't ride, and I told her she couldn't ride a bike, couldn't ride a horse, couldn't do anything like that, but she could draw horses. She was horse mad.
She older or younger than
She's
you?
She's 1 year, 1 day off a year older.
But she never learned to ride.
Buckled the front wheel of a bike on the first attempt.
But you learned, and you think perhaps that you're not quite sure, but this pony was stable nearby, was more or less a pet of yours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you think possibly your father paid a fee or something for you to have access to it. Mm. But you also told me that, in effect, the pony got handed on to you as somebody else got bigger.
Yes.
What was the circumstance there?
I'm sure that that same pony was... the Lee family had him for a while. And they grew out, you know, as the children got older, they went on to something else or they moved.
The Lees were a local family,
yeah,
were
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they're just Sandra and I think it was Bobby. They lived on the corner of Lombard Lane. It's amazing how all these names just pop out. These are people and names that you know. Jan Ford had a pony. We all had at some stage. I just can't remember where they came from or who they were or whatever. But mine was only for a short period, and I had quite a few adventures with him.
Yes, you know? we'll go on to the adventures. And he was stabled in Lombard Lane, or
No. Derwent towards the back of all the main, the proper main entrance of Glebe Public School, up around that area. And there were a lot of stables just before Arundel Street, but I think it was. I've forgotten the name. It runs into the front of Glebe. I can remember a lot of stables and horses and cats and dogs, cats everywhere too.
Lots of animals everywhere.
Yes, yeah.
But the horses were there primarily. They weren't really there as modes of transport. They were racing.
So I'd say a lot. They were big horses. Yeah, a lot of them were racing horses. And no, people like the Iceman or whatever, they would have come from all other areas, and that they weren't draft horses or anything like that, big working horses.
So they would have been...
mainly
for
races, from what I can remember.
For harness racing or for
both? I'd say
galloping.
For both, yeah, I'd say for both, yeah. But certainly closer to Forest Lodge and Glebe End, where I lived, near Hereford Street and between Wigman Road, down and which runs right down to Harold Park, most of the stables at the back of where our library is today, Glebe Library, is there. There are quite a few stables there, running down there and close to the Forest Lodge end, and over the hill too, up the hill of Wigman Road, and there a lot of horse people, and that was all associated with the trots. Mm. Yeah, so,
but you think some of these horses were also not just trotting horses, but perhaps were raced at Randwick?
Yes, could have been
galloping.
Galloping. Yeah. They were big. You know, I suppose trotted out too, but I mean, as a child, you might. But I think there was a good mix. It could have been. You know, I'm sure some of the top trainers. I'm sure some familiar names ring bells in the Glebe area too. That they must be around. That would have been in Sydney races, because that was another treat. My aunt and my father often went to Randwick, because I had that pie and peas and a cup of tea in the mid-centre ring sort of cafeteria that was there. And I'd walk up the window with them and listen to them. I'd put a bet on and everything else. Mind you, today, I'm not the least bit interested in that. I wouldn't know one end from the horse from the other as far as who's going to win.
But they were very keen punters, both
yes,
of them.
Yes, yes, yes. And I don't know... I know it's reasonably big in Europe, and certainly the trots, when I've been to Estonia four times, I've been since the fall of the Soviet, trots are big there.
Are they? Yeah, so you think that might have been where it came from?
I wouldn't have known pre-war. I've never had these sort of discussions with him. It's only from memory and what I can see today, and I was always amazed. I thought, the trots are on. Well, maybe I should go to the trots. But no,
did they ever win?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes, yes, when Auntie did. In the early days, if she'd had a good win, she'd buy, you know, a crystal, a piece of crystal, or part of a dinner set that she was particularly always down to Grace Brothers, into there, and that's where she'd buy her little gift, and so we always knew. But even in her later life, before she died in the 80s, the 1980s, if she still went to the TAB and had a small bet. Actually, the dog and her, my dog and her, they'd waddle up to the TAB and stay there all day. And when Auntie passed away, before that, if she won then, it'd be barbecue chicken and a sponge, and that'd be dinner. We'd come home to barbecue chicken and sponge. Oh, you've won today again. So, you know, they were small bits those days when she was a pigeon, but she still enjoyed it. But I never caught that pug. I can't believe my father and auntie, you know.
What about when your father won? Did he have any sort of display?
I don't know whether he won as often as he... I don't know. I suppose he was on his... Yeah, he was always well-dressed and always wore a grey flannel hat, things like that, white shirt and grey trousers. I'm not aware of what he actually purchased. He must have. Yeah.
What about when they lost? Did you ever hear about that? Silence.
No, yeah. And I don't think they were big, you know. He might have been, but that's why we don't hear about the winnings or the losing. But Auntie, you'd hear, if he lost just a little bit, she'd be grizzly all day. But and if she won, she'd be singing all day, you know. But no, I don't know about, maybe Dad, my father did lose stuff, you know, that I don't know about. But,
So back to your pony. Mm-hmm. You also actually worked in the stables as a...
Yes, that was later.
...as a strapper. That was later. Mm. How old would you have been?
I would have been about 14, you know, just at high school. Probably, could have been a bit, but 14, 15, and that was the stables immediately behind the small park behind where we lived, between Hereford Street and Wigman Lane. And Sammy Urquhart had a big stable there, and... I think they were very, very good horses. They were trotters, though. And I was in the evening paper one time with a lovely New Zealand horse pacer. His name was Gentry, and I remember that. I wish I still had the picture today. I much researched that, but you know, it was a great laugh amongst all the kids, and especially the boys. You know, which one's the horse, sort of thing. You know, you wear a ponytail. But so while I was younger, I dreaded everyone finding this picture of me with a horse because of that. But no, it was lovely. It was some very nice people associated with that stable. And
were they? That's the Urquhart family.
Yeah, they were very included. I don't know whether I knew them personally. I mean, there was a lot of movement of different people in there. I assume, obviously, the day of the paper, I just happened to be there and was opportune, and the papers obviously just won. Oh, a little girl would do well with a horse, you know, a special horse, standing there and holding him, putting his bridle on, and that was instantaneous. But the stable crowd were wanted to teach people, and I'd taken the horses down in the gig to Harold Park on about... Well, quite a few occasions.
How did you do that?
Well, in the
just
gig,
describe
myself,
to people
well,
who
about
might
three
even
or four.
Know what
okay,
a gig
okay.
is.
Okay, going down. The gig is the what's harnessed to the horse that the jockey sits in, well, the driver,
cart.
The driver, yeah. And on a slippery road, the horse slips too, so the wheels still, you know. And we'd go down a group of four, and we'd follow each other down Wigman Road by the hill. And that at first, I can remember first time feeling, because the horse would skid underneath, so you get this jerking movement the first time around. But I'm amazed at the bravery. I couldn't do those things today. Mind you, I'm still the same. People know me. I love movement. I love driving. I love, I'll go anywhere. I'll take you to Wollongong for the day, you know, to drive. I like the movement.
Do you think you link that back to the time that you had the association
bikes,
with the horses?
Bikes, cars, horses, and, yeah, anything with wheels or movement like that. I felt quite happy with some sort of moving.
So being a strapper meant you had quite a bit of responsibility then.
Yes, but I was only junior. I was very young, a girl. There was a senior person in the stables there, and he was in... I think he was an Italian, and so maybe his English wasn't that good, and I think my English was good by then, but still we appreciate the fact, I think, that we were different, you know. Sometimes different nationalities did just recognise each other. I only vaguely remember that. I said, yes, since I've met, he could have been early Lebanese, because he reminds me of my builder, who's Lebanese and doing work, and he's a... Phoenician Lebanese, you know, he could have been that. But he particularly took me under his wing, as nothing weird about it. It was, you know, it was horse love and stable. Mixing the food, teach you everything, you know. But for me, it didn't. When by the time I turned 16, I'd gone a different direction.
So this 14, job was 15. An after school.
Yes,
and
on
holiday
the weekend,
job.
Holiday more so on the holidays, weekends.
So you'd feed the horses, did
yep.
you clean the
wash
stables?
Wash and no, I didn't have to do that. I think the boys and the men did that. Hosing, washing the horses, yep, taking them there, soaping them up and rubbing them down. And some of them very tall, you know, for a shorter girl, you know.
Yes,
you know. But it was good, yeah. Yeah. Trod on your toes sometimes, so you had to wear shoes. Yeah, so much you took in your stride. You learned it very quickly and willingly, but, you know, I was never obviously going to be... a rider or a jockey or anywhere like, you know, that sort of interest there wasn't there. It was just it just seemed to be a normal, well, a special part of being a normal child, and you know, part of the adventure of growing up, and just it was just taken as a part of the life there.
Well, let's go back to your pony, mm-hmm. the one mm-hmm. who was effectively your pet. Mm-hmm. Did he have a name?
Yes, but you know, I know he was. I thought I remembered it last week. Do you know, I can't. I don't know if we renamed him or if I didn't name him because somebody else had named him. You know, I can't.
But anyway, he was passed on to you. He was a pony who was passed on to you from an older girl who graduated to larger horses.
Look, I have to give him a name, but no.
You'll think of it later.
Yes. Lovely tan thing, fat thing.
Was he?
But he was tall, you know.
And so you looked after him too,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, you had to get him. The fee obviously covered his food and that in the stable, but if you couldn't get back to the stables, you had to house them yourself. So they had to know where you lived. I mean, you had to be responsible. And considering we're children of our age, I don't know whether people would do that today. But it was accepted that, you know, there were certain things and we must have been told this, but you had to house and look after the horse, and many a times if I didn't get back because we'd gone to Annandale or down past, you know, towards the other side of Annandale and over the creeks and down the gullies, it might be late in the afternoon, especially on the weekends, you see, and they'd close. So you had to house him, and yes, and I'd have him in the glebe backyard, which is quite small because I've seen it today. I don't know how I managed, nine cats, which weren't really all mine, a little Kelpie dog. And the pony.
And the pony. Mm. And
yeah. And I'd want to sleep out there. I'd want. Oh, it was quite all right because that.
Your father and auntie didn't mind.
No. Gardens weren't big for them. You know, you're just the working people. You know.
So that they
had your paddy tree and everything else, and a little veggie patch, and the pony. Mm. Yes, I think he had everything in sight. But
that was fine.
Yeah.
So you just take him back in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You said that you get back late sometimes, and that was because you're off riding all over the place. So you would roam, I suppose, with other kids on horseback.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you go?
Yeah. Okay. Most of the time, it would have been the back part of Jubilee Oval. It was still one part of the park was still quite rubble, especially down by the canal side. So it's a nice hills there too. Actually, almost where the light rail station today, there's a bit of a hill that overlooks the oval. But further around on the other side of the station, going straight down to the canal, opposite, say, Montague Crescent, that way, it was quite a steep. And the boys used to love to do that, you know, ride up and down those poor horses sometimes, I think. But it'd be a couple of hills that I would choose. And I'd be very careful how to do it, you know. Never remember falling off or having an accident or seeing one.
Seeing an accident.
Yeah, no. Or
but the boys were a bit more leery than the girls, were they?
Yeah. And the surprising thing, we only had a very... I remember the saddle I had was really quite light. And sometimes I wouldn't have a saddle at all, I remember. Sure, it was just a blue blanket... I don't know why, maybe, but it wasn't many times without the saddle. It wasn't very comfortable. but it wasn't big saddle, they were just lightweight sort of saddles. But small children, and off we go. It was just amazing. I can see the images today, and I think, oh, crikey, if my children would, they'd say, that's not my mother.
So, about how old would you have been then?
That would have been about 11. 11, 12, 13. So,
and what sort of numbers would you have in a group? How many kids would go?
No, not many that I knew. In fact, they'd be immediate to the area, to Jan, the Lees, and maybe we'd pick up a couple. So there'd be no more than four or five of us. You know, that would be a group, and then quite often it'd just be two of us. You know, we'd just go out to exercise the horse and that. Well, while we had them, you did it. You know, I don't know. Summer rains were light. They weren't. You were out there a great deal.
No matter what the weather.
But yeah.
You also told me there, you seem to recall that there were some wild horses in Glebe, what you thought were wild anyway.
Yes,
when you
okay.
were
but down the bottom of Hereford Street, it's all been rebuilt now. But there was a big open land space with Orphan Creek runs through it. So the creek was there, and that's why the horse, and I think it was just quite a big acreage sort of block that had never been developed, and so horses were left there. It could have, whether the horse people owned that land or whether it was just sort of public grazing land, it was just because it was very hilly, and well, it still is today, you can see the slope, but when on our way to school to Hereford Street, quite often, you know, we'd cut through there because we'd want the horses. I tell you, everyone was horse mad. We walked through there one day and the horses chased us and we were terrified, absolutely terrified. Well, I was much younger then, I didn't, before the pony. And so the word got out, don't go down there, they're wild horses, they're wild horses. But, you know, they were big horses too. So. Ooh,
and what sort of a number, like three, four?
Oh, there'd be three or four of them at least, you know, but not the four chasers, but just one great big sort of blacky browny thing, you know, came roaring out. Beautiful, but terrified you. So that was good, and we'd sneak past. We'd cross over the road, as we would have been, and maybe seven or eight then. So,
and you had no idea who owned those horses or how they came to be there.
No,
but they were not stabled. Anyway, probably not.
They were just seemed to be on that land, but I don't think I never saw sort of abandoned horses or anything like that. Somebody must have owned them. And that's something that Glebe might have been poor and everything. But I can't say I've been doing human abuse, but I didn't see animals. But I might have mentioned cats, though. Cats were, if you saw a canvas bag or a sugar bag on the road, you often think, little cats in there, because that's what the story was. It was very much the story, you know, that people would put these cats in a bag and let the traffic or whatever run over them. Mm. I mean, I don't know why. Did you hear stories like that as a child?
Yes, very common. Yeah. Because there were so many unwanted kittens, there wasn't the routine sterilisation of cats that there is now.
Well, that's just maybe horses too, because I used to take my pony. My cousin was doing veterinary science at Sydney University, and I used to take down all the animals, unwanted ones or sick birds and that, to the university. She taught me where it was, and I'd go down and I'd take people down to the vet, down to Sydney. I'd almost forgotten that. So I'd turn up with unwanted cat or a sick cockatoo or whatever, you know. But they were very good. They'd take birds and that. It was manned by the students. So it probably still operates today. But there were horses down there too. But, of course, with a pony, as I got older, that belonged to the stable. Would be there, but I don't.
The stable would take care of the pony.
Yeah, but I was never in any need or anything. But I remember taking a few unwanted cats. Or, you know, God only knows what the university did with them in the '50s. But
you mentioned earlier in the interview too, and I said I'd get back to it, about the adventures you had on your pony.
Oh yes.
So can you tell me about those? Well,
it's I suppose a more frightening one when I did. Because you always think you're a better rider than you are, and you think you can control this thing. It was when you're young like that, and you get to know an animal, a horse. You just go with, you know, it's effortless riding it or making it do things. You just won. It doesn't take long too. I don't know, it's an uncanny sort of thing. If you talk well at the beginning, and it just. The freedom there. It's not like the ponies we had, it wasn't dressage or anything like that, or special riding, so it was real free form for both.
So
for
it's
us
not
and
like
pony.
Pony club is
no,
now
no.
for the younger ones.
No, and I don't think I could have, you know, a pony was free, except I thought I was pretty good at riding and everything else, just in this wild way. Annie Oakley style, I suppose, you know, because that was a big one. Early morning, Sunday morning, I don't know, it was early Sunday morning, going down St. John's Road, and I was approaching the town hall, and as you're coming, just approaching the deck, going towards Forest Lodge, and of course, just before the town hall, the tram line comes around there, and I'm coming down quite happily, just jogging along, and then the next thing, a dog comes out and starts sniffing the pony's heels. And dog won't get away, I can't get rid of him, and he just sticks with the pony, and the pony just gets frantic. Because he must have hurt him too, he's absolutely snapping and biting at him. And so he's cantering and belting along St John's Road, and around comes a tram. And I thought, oh, I can't stop him, and he won't stop, I have to pull him over. It happens that quickly though, and I could see this tram, and I thought, my God, I either have to beat this tram or I'm going to hit this tram. I don't know what to do. And then straight out of the side, right opposite the town hall, there was a newspaper shop, and the newspaper boy was just picking up his run and ran out and helped me shoo the dog away and then grabbed the horse before the tram. And it was all so close. And I've never forgotten that. Never forgotten that.
Saved yeah. you and the pony.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yes, I had to... there's a story to the paper boy.
What's the story to the paper boy?
His group of people used to sit on the other side of the cinema. It's funny, they lived towards the Broadway side. And he was sort of quite well liked in his group. Oh, he was liked by that. He was
a popular boy.
Popular boy, yeah. And he was obviously a very nice boy, but, you know, I didn't want popular boys. I didn't want to be associated with popular boys or anything like that. I was into horses and other things, you know. Didn't have time for any of that. But I remember in the cinema, and his group sat on one side, and from about St John's Road, we sat on the others. And it was just a thing. But sometimes you'd go and visit them and sit with them and have a nap and then go back to your own seat with your own group. And that was an unspoken sort of thing that happened. And when I think of it today, it must seem very weird to people, but it was what happened.
Even though you were in the wrong group,
yes.
in effect, he still saved you and the pony.
They were good people. They were good people there. And there was a mixture of early migrants there, Germans, Dutch, but not many. Not, but they were well accepted.
Now, was any particular group associated with horses? Any particular cultural group?
No, not that I'm aware of, no. No, most of them would have been Australian.
Australian.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
They probably from the would names have that I continuity.
Yeah, yeah, from the name. And because I mentioned the Stone family that owned the Astor Theatre and all those shops along there, I think they were involved in the racing world. You know, they might have been owners or something like that. But they were very good business people, and they ran those little shops and very nicely. You know, they were very good. Pop ran the grocery shop and... The wife ran a nice little boutique towards the end of the 50s there, and they really bought up the tone of the era, but they gradually bought a shop and had the cinema, and of course the Astor had the bouncers, and most of them were all local people. And my girlfriend's, one of my friends, she joined us in the bike crowd later as we got older. Push bikes, it is. Bikes. Her father was a bouncer in the cinema, and the cinema was wooden, of course, and on the heavy days, he'd come down the aisles, you know, the same old stories everywhere, but they're all good. So they got to know the children. They're very tolerant, really. And on the whole, I didn't see. Might have been later in the later years, but the 50s was lovely there, really calm.
You mentioned your auntie and your father being very keen on betting, and I think betting was pretty illegal. Betting was pretty widespread in Glebe.
Okay, all right. From home, I don't remember... having to put on, cause they loved to go to the races, the social things. So they
like the whole event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Glebe Point Road, I don't remember an SV, but if you went to the back parts of Forest Lodge or off the main Forest Lodge, I knew many houses that were running SV bookies, and they were all kids that went to the school, and their fathers did that, and they'd be set up in the kitchen with the two. Yeah, it'd be a real little operation. No, we saw it, you know.
There were a lot of sounds associated with SP bookmaking, weren't there?
Sounds.
I was thinking telephones ringing.
Yes, yeah. Not many people had telephones, so if you did have a telephone, and if you had two, all right, there was something going on.
If there were two phones.
Yeah, because we didn't have a phone.
What about radios? Were the races broadcast?
Oh, yeah, and that was on all the time in my house, so that's a big memory that I can remember, the little red Bakelite radio on the mantelpiece, and the races would be on, you know. Yeah. Oh, yes, no, that was... my father might have known where the SP, but I can't remember, and he never asked me to do it, but I've been in there with the kids, and then we've come out again,
No, so the kids would go and put the bed on for mum or dad?
Quite often. Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that was quite acceptable. Mm. Mm-hmm.
So my recollection is that the bookmakers always had a lot of radios to listen to the races. I'm just wondering if they didn't, how they would actually know the results with any speed.
Oh, they'd have radios and they'd have one or two telephones, but the normal people, people next door didn't. I can't remember any of our neighbours having a telephone. But there were plenty of public phones around. There was one, but they were a half one, so if it was a rainy day, you got wet at the bottom. You know, with this little green thing with that graffiti paint, and I was always ringing up my auntie at Neutral Bay because they were more wealthy. My auntie at Neutral Bay and at Gordon and at Crow's Nest, they did have the phone on, so I'd have to ring them up for auntie, but we couldn't afford the phone. She was a maiden aunt with my father. So.
The other thing that you've told me about, which I think you have very fond memories of, is actually going to the races at Harold Park. Mm.
Oh, yes.
The trots.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could just tell me a bit about that and tell me in as much detail as you can remember what it was like.
Okay. Because we live so close to Wigman Road, we'd walk down Wigman Road because it was a lovely street. Still is today. The grand old villa type mansions that are there, quite, you know, 3-4 storey as you get on one particular side, closer to the Glebe Road end. On a summer's night walking down there, street lights, and it might have been light when you left home, but walking down that hill towards the trail and seeing it all lit up with the lights, it was like fairyland. It was a lovely feeling. And there were lots of people on the road. There would be, you know, every few yards another group of people, and they'd all obviously come. The tram used to go down Montague, but it was obviously the Glebe people and Piermont, or maybe they've walked all the way over. People walked quite distances, but that was particularly nice going down there in the night. Maybe I was just happy to go there, and we'd call in. The smaller cottages closer to Harold Park, there'd be girlfriend live in one house, and I'd wave to her or whatever, or her parents would come out and wave or something, and then another friend, they were actually involved. They live right opposite the lower entrance of Harold Park, and then another group lived close to the main entrance. I think they'd be the same entrances today, off Ross Street, where Ross Street ends, right into the Harold Park thing. So they lived, most of the people connected in that lower end of Ross Street were in the trotting world there, somehow either worked there or owned horses or trotters and that. But it was a lovely, it was all lit up. I mean, there weren't many places in the night that you could go out in a group like that, and it was just pretty. There might have been other things, but in our life, this was quite a social central thing. And the fact that the kids could go too, you know.
So it was a family event.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole family could go.
Could go, yes.
It wasn't something where kids were banned or where the kids didn't want the parents to be.
No.
It was something you all did together.
Mm. I don't think that they went very late. So they would have started, I think most things sort of close, with pubs and everything closed, you know, 10:30. Most people were home by then. I don't think it was, you know.
It may have still been 6 o'clock closing of
could
the
have
pubs
been,
as well.
Yeah, could have been very early, yeah.
And I'm guessing here, but it was probably pre-television?
Oh, yes, it's all this, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Television came to Glebe, I think. In 1958, I think. When that first came to Glebe, it's a little shop today, the Elikers, and it's the second one from the corner of Toxford Street. It was a little electrician shop, and he had it, the TV in the window. It was winter, and there's about 30 people, and me too, squeezed in the front there, watching this snowy version of a television through the window.
The terrible reception.
Yes,
and
it was
no
awful. Oh, yeah, this continual drone sort of thing. You could make out things, but there's so much crackle noise around it or something like that. Yeah, no, he did. He used to put this TV on, but it wasn't soon after that Daddy and Auntie got an AWA box TV, you know, that we had for many years. It went to Katoomba when she retired. So, that was amazing, all standing out there. And I remember quite cold and looking at this thing, but we're just...
So when you were actually in Harold Park, what was it like then? Can you remember much about it, actually being there as a kid?
Probably not. Probably half the size from what I can remember. I don't remember the... we always stayed on between the Wigman Road and Ross Street end, in that corner. I don't know why.
In effect, the eastern end, I suppose, or northern end.
No, it'd be the southeastern. It'd be the southern end of it, but the east side.
Southeast.
Wigram
and Ross.
Yes. And we tended to stay in that place. And I don't remember a lot of food like today. You can get things like that. The only thing, of course, hot dogs were big then, you know, and they're far better than what they used to be. But yeah, hot dogs and tea. Tea was always. I don't remember coffee.
About alcohol? Was there alcohol there?
I thought later, by the glass maybe or something. But I don't remember a lot or anything. I don't remember bottles, but I think I remember glasses. But yeah.
Did you? I mean, you were still quite young then. Did you get involved in the races itself? Like, did you get excited about particular horses that might have won, or that didn't matter much to you?
No, didn't. You know, in fact, I thought it was ridiculous.
Yes,
horses running around there trying to, you know, and they're putting money on it. So even today, you know, any friends in that, like a very good friend downstairs, she'd be slotted with that same birth date as Auntie, 1st of May, they share that date, and they're just the same sort of psyche people, you know. But no, I never got that bug. Father and Auntie had it.
But you loved being there.
Oh, God, yes, I loved it, loved the horse, and loved the social bit of it and dressing up and...
So you get dressed up to go?
Yeah.
What kinds of things did you wear?
Yeah, I definitely... Auntie would always not to the trots gloves or anything. If she was going to Randwick, would be different. But as a child, we were well dressed to go to Randwick during the daytime. The trots probably not so much, but still reasonably well dressed. And most of the men were in their grey suits or whatever. I don't think there was anything else they had to wear, you know. But you didn't go shoeless or anything like that, or. I can remember most of the men were in ties, grey felt and that.
The Sunday best kind of thing.
For Randwick, maybe, in the daytime. Maybe second best for the trots in the night.
At night.
But not working, I didn't see sloppy men. Or
not working
sloppy.
Clothes.
No.
Mm. So the trots, in social terms, the might trots have been was a lower
little,
grade than
I think so.
Less money involved more working class people involved than Randwick. And so while you were there, though, you weren't actually interested in the racing, but did you run around with your friends or...
Actually, I don't... You met other children there, but my immediate girls' friends, I don't know, they used to sit out the front of their houses. On the brand. Actually, I remember sitting outside Janice's house several times too. Auntie and them would go and play, and I'd just stay there out in the veranda and play for a short time. It never seemed to be very long. I don't know what the period, but, you know. A couple of hours, but... It never seemed to be a distress. I never had to go sleep on a corner or sit down or rest or anything.
You weren't bored?
No. No, not particularly, no.
Now, you mentioned also the other day that somebody was writing something about Randwick and that there was an Estonian woman dressed in black.
Yes.
And you thought this was possibly your aunt.
Could have been,
Can you just tell me what that story was about?
It was an ABC program and it was on the history of racing in Sydney. And I'm trying to track down the video of it. It was done, I think, in the... it must have been mid-70s. Mid-90s. It's not that old, but I'm having trouble tracing. Lynn thought it was a particular thing, but it's not. I thought it was just called The Track. But there's a book being written about The Track, too, that I must track down and get. And I thought that the program was... It must have been based on the program. But she seemed to think the program was another name. But it did refer... In one of the episodes, it referred to identities that frequented Randwick. And one of the references, and it was so quick, the references was this Estonian lady in the 50 who always went to Randwick, did well, you know, little wins or anything, and put money up, and always dressed in black. You know, and I thought, gee, Auntie used to wear just a plain little black dress and little black shoes and little hat, but never always dressed up for Randwick, which I had some of the photos. But, yeah, and I thought, oh, you know, and I couldn't believe it because I can't remember another Estonian woman. In fact, they used to get in trouble from the Estonian house about their racing sort of habits. But, you know, yeah, not in trouble, but they would talk. They would talk.
Who?
You know,
your father and auntie. Yep, they would talk because they were punters.
Brother and sister, off the races they go, you know, leave the rest. No, we're not going to come down and make cakes for this. We're going to the races, you know. I'm sure there were other people too. He used to play snooker and billiards. I grew up under the billiard table in the Estonia house because he was always playing. I used to play underneath the tables while he played on top. Auntie used to make lovely soup there too, so they were involved in the Estonia house. But, yeah, he had obviously a bit of a gambling streak. I've got his silver cup from winning poker, 1954 poker. So must be something there, but I mean nothing. I do lotto, and that's my own small lotto.
Your little flutter.
And then, you know, but that's only a new thing. Otherwise, not the least bit.
Now, you don't ride now, I think.
No, not when would I have last? I mean, over the years when the children were small, often we'd make sure that they, if we went on, it reminded me of a Katoomba because we had a cottage there. Towards Medlow Bath, there was a saddlery there and children. And when the boys went up there, and I went with a girlfriend used to come up and stay, and her two daughters, we all went riding. Yep, through the mountains and that. And all, if we couldn't go, I'd always make sure there was a horse or a pony or sessions, that the boys would have several sessions. Yeah. Today, Andrew's got an old racehorse there that was his wife's on his property.
Where does he live now?
They live at Holgate. Holgate, and they've got 5 acres there. And Jerry's the old racehorse. It used to be in... Nicky used to do with dressage and that when he was younger and better, but he's not too well at the moment, so... He just lives there quite happily. I did make the boys, but just as an interest, because you learnt so much. I won't say respect, but it's quite a different sort of animal than to work with. A horse, it does. I hadn't thought about some of these. But it disciplines you in a way, the horse, to build up the trust. And for children, it's unsaid. I mean, you don't analyse it, you don't put a definition to it or anything like that, but you know that there has to be, you know, he trusts you, you trust him, but you have to be sensible, because they, you know, it can be dangerous. I never thought of the danger, though. It would never have occurred to me to think that I could fall off and crack my head or something like that, which obviously can happen very easily. We didn't do... Oh, down Jubilee Park, that's what the boys used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping, they'd set up their own jumps. And that's... I didn't like the feeling sometimes, because we had very hard, very minimal saddles and everything else, you know. As I got older, I thought that was... They were pushing it there. Without even saying, I just didn't like it. Mm. So, you know, I wouldn't say, oh, no, I don't feel like that today. You know, wouldn't. But they'd set up jumps. You know. I mean, they weren't proper things. God, I hope those horses never broke their legs or anything.
But the boys
that was just
wanted
things.
To be
It's just... But I think I was never witnessed anything wrong, but those sort of things that, yes, they might try and do those sort of things, see a bit of that on the films, you know, all these... mountain, you know, people riding horses and all these Annie Oakley sort of movies and cowboys. That's right, cowboys in New York was enormous. We used to run around the playground with ropes around our school belts from our tunics around us and play horses. You know, someone would be the horse and someone would be the rider, and we'd be neighing around the schoolyard. Everyone played horses. Did you play horses?
Yes.
You did.
But now that you mention it, the younger generation now doesn't, because they're very remote from horses, aren't they? It doesn't have the same you know, they're not fashionable the way they were. Yeah. You know, what you're referring to in films and books and popular culture.
Right.
And it's a very interesting point that it still was related also directly to your own life because you could have access to a horse.
Of course, yeah. Well, I'm sure lots of people had lovely horses and love, like the pony school. I'm sure they still existed in the 50s with the... So, but, you know, not in our area as such, but...
So, is there anything else you'd like to say today?
Oh,
we've covered
gosh.
Quite a lot of territory.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm amazed at the things you can remember. It was just so delightful being there at Glebe. And that's why I so enjoy going back to Glebe and just driving up Glebe Road. And I can look at the houses and think, oh, yes, the Camerons lived there. Oh, I remember. Actually, Camerons lived in one mother and father and two children. And they had a TV, and I was allowed to go up. Before we had ours, I was allowed to go to their room on Sunday and watch TV. They had a shared kitchen in the back of the really quite... I think it was a bus conductor, the father. But they had a TV, and I was introduced to Quick Draw McGraw. I used to go there to watch that on a Sunday night, and that was early 50s when the... Oh, 56,
no,
mate? Would have been 56, 57? 56, 57. They got a TV before anybody else in the street.
Yeah, well, it came into Australia generally in
1966. 66, yeah.
56,
yeah.
But yeah, so they perhaps they had it.
Because we didn't get till 58, but I think they were the first in the street, and everyone was amazed.
Yes, it was very compelling. So, that's it?
Yes, all right.
Thank you very much, Edda. That was great.